Hi, today is November 29th, 2020. This is Mobile Views Podcast 341. I'm Todd Agasa with my good friend John Westfall. And today we've just got a couple of small items to discuss. Well, actually, John has a big item to discuss. And the bulk of it will probably be our affordable tech gift recommendations, suggestions. Suggestions is probably a better word. Recommendation sounds a little too strong, but I like the ones I'm going to suggest.
Any rate, between us, we own all of these too.
Yeah, almost, since, almost. So, or
something. Almost close. The things that are available to own.
We own. Yeah. So we've actually used them. This is not just stuff we saw and thought, "Oh, that'd be nice." But I did want to say it's the end of November, and so I think started this in 12 years now. Yeah, I think this podcast is 12 years old now. So it's getting up there. It's a preteen. It's going to be a teenager next year, or actually, it's a teenager next month, I guess. I got to think about this. Depends. You know, in Western society, I guess it's 12. In Japan, it'd be 13. In Korea, it'd be 14. So it depends how you count birthdays.
Yeah, and I believe I started in late 2013. So I think I'm now like 7 years with this podcast.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Long time. Thank you, by the way. Okay, so this one, I don't know if John is interested in this. I found it moderately interesting. So here's the lead up to it. So I bought my first Chromebook when one was available that could run Android apps as an option out of the box, right? So it was a built-in Google-provided Chrome OS option, and you turn it on, you can run Android apps. And I found it interesting. I'm not sure I run any Android apps on any of my Chromebooks, although they can right now. So it turned out to be not as useful as I thought. It's not something I use the way I thought I was going to use. Then more recently, macOS Big Sur gained the ability, which is macOS 14, gained the ability to run iOS apps if you have an M1-powered Mac, like the new MacBook Air, MacBook Pro, or Mac Mini. And, you know, again, it's really intriguing, and one of the reasons I bought the new MacBook, M1-powered MacBook Air, but I really haven't found myself using iOS apps. Okay, so maybe it's just me. Anyway, Microsoft has decided to follow the trend, and they already support Linux subsystems on Windows 10. They've done that for years. It runs pretty well, I should say. And but now they're talking about, I think it's called something Project Cafe or something, or something like that. Project Latte. They're working on running Android apps in a subsystem under Windows 10. I don't know, John. Like I said, I have found limited. I acquired these products with great interest in doing these things, you know, running alternate applications on the main platform. But now that I've gone through it several times with a bunch of Chromebooks and with my, more recently with my Mac, I'm not that excited about it.
Yeah, it's really sort of frustrating, but it is very true that we don't we don't really have a lot of use scenarios for mobile apps on non-mobile platforms at this point. And I think we'll get there as mobile apps more and more mature, and especially now that the iPad Pro has sort of set the middle ground where you have a mouse and you have a keyboard, you have touch input and all of that. I could certainly see people being able to develop things for iOS or iPadOS that would port nicely to macOS.
Right.
And I assume the same thing applies to Android apps that will be able to port to Chromebooks. But actually, I think it would probably be the reverse way around, building something that would be an Android and design it to run on a Chromebook natively anyway.
Yeah.
But I just don't see a lot of modern apps that the desktop equivalent doesn't do the job better or on par.
Yeah, the one thing that would have been nice, which is at least it's not true in the MacBook for the most part, is if you could simply run, you know, some of the higher end, if you want to call it that, iOS apps on the MacBook, the M1-powered MacBook. And, you know, to some extent you can. Like I think in our first, the earlier podcast where I described installing Camera Plus 2 on my MacBook Air, and that was pretty cool, I thought. But, you know, some of the more complex applications, like, for example, Pixelmator for the iPad Pro, which, you know, is pretty cool. It's a pretty cool photo manipulation and somewhat of a drawing app. I've tried. It's really not a great drawing app, but for photo manipulation, it's awesome. And so I think it's like $10 or $20 on an iPad. But it, you know, by design or by choice, the Pixelmator folks are not allowing you to install the iOS app on M1 Mac. And that's because they sell a $40 or $50, you know, native, or at least x86 native. I haven't checked to see if they have an M1 version, but it's, you know, $40 or $50 Pixelmator Pro for the Mac. So, you know, why would they let you run the cheaper version when they really want you to, you know, and they need to make a profit to stay in business. That makes sense. But it takes away some of the appeal of running iOS apps on a Mac. And some just say, well, you know what, it's not a good fit. So, you know, for example, my favorite app I use for drawing is called Procreate. And they have already said, hey, you know what, we don't feel that the Mac is the right platform for it. And it doesn't have a touch screen, blah, 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 all true. Mm-hmm. So we're not gonna allow it to be installed on M1 Mac. But at any rate, just wanted your thoughts, because I guess we'll see. We'll see how, especially because they're going to be emulating an ARM or, you know, whatever, right? ARM type processor from Android on a presumably Intel based PCs. Might be interesting if it runs on their ARM based PCs. Might run better. I don't know. Anyway. Oh, and speaking of macOS, it's not in our show notes. I just wanted to mention to John, you know, so I'm looking at my macOS settings on system preferences on my MacBook Pro, my 2019 MacBook Pro, Intel based, and it's telling me, hey, you know, I've got the Big Sur update ready for you. Do you want to install? And I'm like, nah, not really. So I unchecked automatically keep my Mac up to date last week, and I've been preventing it from updating until I can get my audio software. I think the folks, Rogue Amoeba, the folks that used that produced the audio software I used to process this, have got like functional versions for Big Sur. I haven't checked on Audacity, which is what I use for some processing, post-processing, I should say. So I'm going to wait a while. And it's also the reason I'm not recording on the M1, because I don't think the software is ready for production, as they say. So anyway, John has been doing some experimenting with stuff.
Yeah, so I've gotten a little bit into iOS programming over the last couple of weeks. I mean, I've dabbled in iOS programming in the past, but I actually had a app I wanted to build, which was a simple macro dashboard. You know, I've been doing a lot of health-related stuff this year, and one of the things that frustrates me is I really enjoy using Apple's HealthKit to store all of my health data. Mm. But I just want a simple app that will display some of it and also let me set goals easily each day and modify them. So my app right now basically pulls some macronutrients out of HealthKit, and then you've got a little some text boxes over to the right where you can put whatever your goal is for that day, and then it'll show you a little progress bar and tell you how many you have, you know, left and all of that for each of those. Surprisingly, there are no apps that just do that. There are a lot of apps that build that in, but you also need to use them for logging your food and everything else. So one thing I thought would be nice would be an iOS 14 widget that would have this information sort of as a dashboard on my home screen. And what I found was kind of interesting. So iOS 14, first of all, I'm doing all this development in Swift, which is much nicer than Objective-C. I don't think anyone ever argues that fact. But Swift, because it's hard to believe it, but it's only a six-year-old language. Apple, as the primary pushers of Swift, even though Swift is open source, have really pushed different ways of using Swift. And so if you find a Swift tutorial that was written, especially if it's using Apple iOS APIs and such, if you find something from 2014 to 18, it's probably worthless. Just because Swift has changed so much, there are things, it seems every year, that Apple decides not only should we tweak what we did, we should completely throw out the old way we did this and do it a completely new way. And definitely widgets, because they did only debut this year, are, it can be really frustrating to find good documentation on widgets. And even some of the documentation Apple provides is already a little out of date, because they've tweaked it a little more ever since they wrote those in February, March, preparing for iOS 14. So Swift, if you're going to jump in and you did some Swift programming when it came out like I did, you start playing with it, be aware that it's going to differ quite a bit. I will note that there is a series of curriculum that Apple themselves puts together on iBooks or Apple Books, which is actually very decent. It's a good curriculum for a programmer that wants to get into Swift, even though it's designed for people who don't have any programming background. It really gets you jumped into some basic things that you'd want to know about early on. So definitely take a look at that. And target sort of the middle books that they have. They have some explorations books. I think the, in fact, I'll bring it up right now so that I can say which book. And oddly enough, the iOS or the Xcode 11 versions are a little bit better, I think, than the Xcode 12 versions, but that's just kind of the oddity of it. But let's see, Swift. Need to figure out how to get to just my books.
Hmm.
Yeah, so develop in Swift. Fundamentals and develop in Swift explorations are the two that are pretty good. And I'll put some links in our show notes to those books. And they are completely free because, of course, Apple wants you to program in Swift. So sure, they're going to do some nice things to make it easy as possible for them. But one thing I did notice about WidgetKit that is interesting if you are deciding to do a widget. First of all, debugging background refresh tasks can be a little frustrating on iOS, because the way Apple handles background refresh is it's sort of at the whim of the operating system, so you're just sort of waiting to have your device eventually refresh your app. But WidgetKit, actually, and this is probably where people are coming in with widgets are stale data. Hmm. WidgetKit works off of what they call a timeline. And a timeline is a series of entries that you tell WidgetKit that you want to load in ahead of time, and then at a certain determined amount of time, it'll cycle to the next timeline item. So if you're building a game, and this is one of the examples they use, and you know that there's going to be a dragon that attacks in 2.5 hours, whatever the game mechanic is, you can set it and say, okay, for the next hour, 2 hours, there should be no change to the widget. And then in 2 hours, I want, it to say, oh, an attack is imminent or something like that. And then in 3 hours, the attack ended and your guy ended up with X health or whatever it might be. So this is a really efficient way in terms of iOS only needs to load that timeline once for presumably up to 3 to 4 hours of information you want to put in. You can imagine if you're developing a weather application or something like that, you can take the next 3-4 hours of forecast data and load them in at once. But it also means that your data is never that fresh in a widget. Because even if you're telling it to refresh you and, you only want to load one item in the timeline and you want it to refresh every 45 minutes, it can get very picky, with macro logging, for example. If I use an app like MyFitnessPal that's going to write into Apple Health that I ate 18 grams of carbs, that's not going to show up in my WidgetKit widget for up to an hour or so, even if it's functioning perfectly. So that is sort of the frustrating thing that you find with widgets. But I've had a lot of fun with it. I would encourage people, if they have time for Christmas and they're bored, either play around with Swift and iOS programming or pop into the Android ecosystem. We haven't done that in a while, and play around with Android Studio. And there's just some neat ways that code is getting more and more efficient. And Swift definitely... I joke with a friend of mine who is a electrical engineer and does a lot of programming in very low-level languages. I say, you read the way that Swift does and you go, wow, that's really cool and it's really readable, but I had no idea how it was written until I saw someone else write it. And that is kind of my frustration. It looks very elegant and it's extremely readable, but if you've never done it, you're searching around going, exactly what is the syntax for this, or exactly what is the method for this?
So, I've never even looked at Swift code. So, is there anything that's even moderately simple? Is it like, does it look more like C, C sharp, or does it more look like more a scripting language like Python? Or
yeah, it's going to look a lot more like Python, to be honest. Python or a scripting language, but because it's fully object oriented and it's designed to be efficient, it's going to be, I think, yeah, Python is probably the closest language that it's going to look like. And, you know, the tools are very nice. Xcode works pretty well, although just like most Apple applications, Xcode can be very overwhelming when you first start playing with it because there's a lot of stuff rammed into it. The simulators have gotten much faster for iOS than they used to in the past. It used to be that if you turned on a simulator of an iPhone 12 or something like that, or it would take it, you know, 5 minutes or so to get up and running. Now it takes it about a minute, so that is nice.
And there's also, isn't there also like Swift Playground for iPads or something?
Yeah, and that program is really nice in terms of you can actually use it for prototyping. There's actually some development videos on Apple's developer website where they show using Swift Playgrounds not just to learn Swift, but also do some prototyping because it basically gives you a canvas that you can, you know, design UI elements and things like that directly and then take it right to Xcode and use it. So Swift Playgrounds is not just a toy for learning to develop. It's actually a playground for a developer who wants to, you know, create a new control or create a new, you know, function of some sort before they move it into a full Xcode project.
Nice. I'm looking at the Swift Playground, Apple Swift Playground website now, and it says it also works with various kinds of products out like Spiro and Lego Mindstorms EV3, which is super expensive, and some Parrot drones and stuff. So you can control some real world objects for it by design, which is nice. All right. Okay, so now on to our... I like to think of them as affordable tech gift suggestions. $100 or less. Mostly less. Mostly way less, actually. I think we only have two items that even come close. Yeah, one $90 item and $100 item. And they're both kind of similar, so it makes sense.
Yeah, then they're both not available right now, so you're not getting them this Christmas.
Yeah.
But you might get them next year.
Yeah. So the first one I'm going to suggest that you... for your consideration is the Apple Beats Flex Bluetooth earbuds. And the reason I suggest them is A, they're affordable. They're $50 in the US. And, you know, it's way cheaper than the AirPods Pro. But also, you know, if you're going to get them for somebody like me who's prone, you know, who has big ear holes and whose AirPod Pros fall out and maybe would prefer to have a wire, a cable between the two earbuds, and have volume control right on the earbuds. Well, there you go. They're not as comfortable as AirPods Pro. They don't sound as good, but they're $50. And they sound pretty good. Now they're good enough for me. Like I said, you don't feel like you're gonna lose them every time you wear them, like I do with the AirPods Pro, which is why I don't take them out of the house. So there you go. We do have one other gift idea that approaches $100, and that's the Instant Pot with Wi-Fi, which I have been drooling over for a while now. It's normally $150, but it is currently at $90 from Amazon. I think it's only good. I don't know. I wouldn't say it's only good for the next few days, but it's been on sale for a little over a week now. Just got mine. Haven't even tried it yet, but... So the allure is that it supports Wi-Fi. It's 2.4 gigahertz, by the way, not 5. 2.4 gigahertz Wi-Fi, and it can do things like let you know on your phone when, you know, the Instant Pot is done with your food, which, well, it's a big deal. It's a big deal to me. It's something I've long wanted.
Well, and I have an earlier version of it that worked over Bluetooth Low Energy. So as long as you were home, which I guess, you know, if you're away, it's just kind of horrible to know your food is done and you're not there to eat it. But if you were at home, it had fairly good range. But I think the Wi-Fi, if I was going for it now, I would definitely get the version with Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
But I've been an Instant Pot user for now probably 4 years, and we love the thing. We use it all the time.
Yep, it is an amazing, amazing device. I went up from the 3-quart mini to the, you know, normal size, I guess, 6-quart thing. So it actually has more cooking options than the mini does. It has a saute feature, which the mini doesn't, and things like that. But at any rate,
that is a great feature you will enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah, the
saute feature makes things much easier.
Yeah, yeah. I've had to been, you know, using a pan on a stovetop to brown meat, you know, chicken, stuff like that.
Oh,
yeah.
It's just horrible.
Like an animal.
Just living. Yeah.
Like a primitive animal cooking on a stovetop. But at any rate. Okay, next item gets into the affordable range, I think. And that's the first one is a Logitech M535 Bluetooth mouse. And I'm very specific about that, that particular model, because I've tried a whole bunch of mouses, mices, mice, whatever you call it, the plural is. Specifically, I'm always looking for a mouse that's really comfortable to use, that is on right away when I open up my laptop or my, you know, whatever it is, my Chromebook, whatever it is, I'm opening it up to use. And is available to use, so I'm not clicking around for half a minute to a minute trying to get it to, you know, get it reconnected to the device. And other devices, including other Logitech devices, including the higher-end ones, all are like that. They all, like, take forever to sort of respond to sleep. This $30 one, again, it's the Logitech M535. It's a tiny mouse. It's designed to be used with a notebook. You know, it's easy to carry. It's not flat, but it is small. And it's very comfortable in the hand, and it wakes up really fast, which to me is the main point. It does use a battery, so it's not rechargeable. It's one AA battery. So, and it seems to last quite a while. I can't remember, you know, every couple of months I have to change one battery. And so that seems very reasonable. The next one is semi-related, and, you know, I really like Anker. And I bought an Anker Bluetooth mini keyboard for use with my iPad mini. I carry it every day with me. But for some reason, several months ago, I noticed I couldn't order it from Amazon anymore, or it wasn't available. So I saw this thing called, I don't even know how you pronounce this, Artec? A-R-T-E-C-K. A-R-T-E-C-K. And they make a Bluetooth keyboard that looks and feels and weighs almost exactly the same. The only difference is that the Anker keyboard was designed specifically for Mac or iOS, whereas the Artec keyboard, and it's not even the layout, it's just the labels, you know, are labeled more for a Windows device, but it doesn't matter. You press the same keys and you get the same result, you know, if you need a command key or anything. So, anyway, for, again, this is amazing. It's $30 for a keyboard and a Bluetooth mouse. And the keyboard is amazing. The mouse is okay. I would say it's just a hair below the Logitech M535, about the same size. And I bought it for use at my office because, you know, I have a regular keyboard, but I don't like it. I also have a regular mouse that my workplace gave me, which I also don't like. And so I've become so comfortable.
You're just hard to please.
Yeah. I've become so comfortable with the Anker mini keyboard of the iPad mini, which I've been using heavily since the pandemic began, and I was, you know, just dragging it to me, you know, with me whenever I went to go work, sort of in the field, so to speak. And it's become my note taker. It's anyway, $30 Artec Bluetooth keyboard and mouse combo. So it's a keyboard and mouse, and they're both pretty good. The keyboard is very good. The next one is a interesting one. I have a Jellicomb Bluetooth keyboard that I also really like. I used that for quite a while before I got the Anker. But anyway, so Jellicomb, two words, you know, jelly, like J-E-L-L-Y, comb, like what you run through your hair. Jellicomb has this thing. It's a one-ear, single-ear, noise-canceling wireless earpiece. So basically, it fits around your ear so it won't fall off, sticks in your ear, and it's... again, my Bluetooth headset at work physically broke, I should say. And so I said, oh, to heck with it. This is reasonably priced. It's $30. I'm going to go get it. And so I can carry it everywhere with me, you know, to and from work. I don't have to leave it in the office because it's so tiny. It comes in a little hard shell case. And even even though it's only 1 year, actually that's a plus for me because there aren't very many people in the office, but I can hear them even if I have the earpiece on because it's only on one ear. I don't know how well I sound with it. Maybe I should try recording something to see how I sound. Nobody has complained so far, so I assume I sound okay. I don't know. John, are you using... You don't use... You sometimes use a Beats over the head.
Yeah, I headset. Usually do, and today they were actually dead. I haven't charged them in about 4 months, and so they actually had died, and so I had to charge use my AirPods Pro today for recording.
Yeah, and you sound fine. They both sound fine.
I really only use the AirPods Pro and the Beats Solo 3s, and I might end up moving to just the AirPods Pro, because the Beats Solo 3s, I've had them for 5 years now, and while they are really nice, I use the AirPods probably about 2 to 3 hours a day anyway, so I might as well just use them for everything.
And you plug and you recharge your AirPods every time you put them in a case, so you know they'll be charged.
Yeah, and I have a little over here. I have a little charging mat that I lay them on, and they charge up that way too. So,
okay. And the next one is, I think John uses this too, is a Sugru, S-U-G-R-U, Sugru moldable glue. It varies in price from $8 or $9 to $20-something, depending on what kind of kit you buy. Basically, it depends how many moldable, like chewing gum stick type things you buy. I use them every now and then to, you know, to build or fix something simple. You know, like it's, you know, if you have like a hole in something and you just want to patch it up real quick, I use Sugru if you want to. But recently, you know, again, this is kind of my whole pandemic response kit. Since the pandemic began, because I use headsets all the time of different types, I have a number of wired headsets, including a lav mic that I have, but the lav has a super long cord, which is by design. I wanted like a 15-foot cord so I could walk, you know, around my where I'm sitting to get stuff without taking it off. But I had nowhere to put it easily. And so I used Sugru and I made a little, I think I used paperclip. I unfolded a paperclip to create a skeleton, put the Sugru around it, and I stuck it to my lamp. So it's sticking off the side of my lamp, a floor lamp, and I just hang my headphones on it when I'm done. I don't know, do you use Sugru, John?
I have not used it recently, but I think I did use it for something at one point. It is a very handy thing to have.
Yeah. It does have a shelf life, so, you know, don't just buy it to have it. I think it's like a 1 year shelf life, but I've used it when it's a little bit expired and seems to work fine. The tip they give is to keep it in your fridge. If you have little kids, make sure they don't eat it because it's very colorful looking, can be colorful looking. And might look like a stick of gum, so, you know, be careful with that. But otherwise, really super handy. You can make all kinds of things to hold stuff, basically, you know, whatever that stuff is. I made an Apple Pencil holder for my first gen, which you need to roll off the table and stuff. And so, super duper handy.
Well, and in case you have a kid with a hole in it, I mean, if your child has got a hole, I guess you can use Sugru to patch them up. But I would probably not eat it either.
All right. John, you've got a couple of things here.
Yeah, I've got some fun stuff. So I went through, you know, my purchase history over the last year and found some cool stuff that I think would be useful. The first is a USB rechargeable milk frother. Hmm. So this is really what this is a little stick blender. And I use these to make what I call my protein hot chocolate. It's double chocolate whey powder with black coffee, which tastes pretty much like a not too sweet hot chocolate. But you really want to make sure that stuff's blended in well. So I've used this rechargeable milk frother for a few months now. I've been pretty happy. It's only $11. And anything I can get that charges over USB, I'm happy.
There you go.
Versus not having to have batteries that I need to put in there. Another one that's kind of cool is OXO, which is OXO makes a bunch of random cool things. They have this Good Grips Sweep and Swipe Laptop Cleaner, which when I found it's only $10, and I'll show it to Todd since I've got it here with me. But it basically has a real brushy edge on it, so you can brush into crevices, and then it's got another part that is basically a microfiber wipe And it's just fun to play with because it has this nice little clicky noise and all that sort of thing. So that's only $10. I bought one for myself, one for my wife a few months ago.
Yeah.
There is a, so the scale that I bought in April when I started losing a bunch of weight, I don't know if your results will be the same as mine, but the scale I think definitely helped. It was $40 when I bought it. It's normally $30, and right now there's a $10 coupon on Amazon, so it's down to $20. But it is a digital scale that is Bluetooth enabled, so it'll report your body fat and everything else to your iPhone or your Android device, so you can keep track of those vitals if you would like.
You know,
and for $20, a pretty nice deal.
You know, as a horizontally challenged person, I bought one of those recently from Amazon. I don't know if it's this one, but it was also $20 or $25. I thought it was a really good price, and it does body fat and Bluetooth. I still haven't opened a box because I kind of don't want to know. But now you have inspired me to open a box.
15 years of not knowing how much I weighed at least. So, you know. But yeah, it is crazy how much these things have come down in price.
Yeah. I remember they were when they were like $100.
Well, and my theory on it is even if it's not 100% accurate, it's usually consistent within itself.
Mm.
So I can at least use it to see progress over time, even if that, even if the number isn't objectively correct. You know, it's it has reliability, perhaps not validity. So we'll leave it at that. Another nice thing that's USB charged is a flexible arc lighter. That you charge over USB. So this is if you have someone in your life that likes to light candles or likes to have fire around, you don't need to keep buying, you know, stick lighters and things like that with actual butane in it. You can use these arc lighters, which are really cool. And for $15, it can be one of the last lighters you ever have to buy. And they do make them with the flexible head so that it can get down into a scented candle or whatever you're using it for. Speaking of which, go ahead.
I have a story about candles, but go ahead and you finish.
I have another story about candles. Is it the one about scented candle reviews?
Yes! Yes, go ahead.
Todd and I, since we're both data nerds to some extent, ran across this story, I'm assuming, I know independently this week because we haven't talked since last week. But it was someone who had basically correlated number of COVID-19 cases with scented candle reviews and then used unscented candle reviews as a control.
Yeah.
And found that as the number of cases have gone up, the number of negative reviews on scented candles has also gone up.
Yeah.
Because presumably people who don't realize they're affected are complaining that their scented candle doesn't smell like what it's supposed to smell
right.
like.
It has no scent. That was their complaint.
Yeah.
Which... We don't know if that's really the reason,
true,
but the
but
numbers.
Not the candle's fault.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't want to laugh because these are ill people, but the data, just the. It's great being a data wonk. That's all I can say.
Yeah, it really is. And I love that just because at the end, the article finished with, if you do buy a scented candle, maybe leave a positive review because it's a rough time for the scented candle makers right now getting negative reviews.
Yeah, I mean, but who would have
thought,
right?
But that
is
quite ironic.
Yeah, you would not have
thought that. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. There is the whole website. Have you ever seen the website of Spurious Correlations?
No, but I'm looking it up right now.
All right, so I will find it and throw it in our show notes. It is tylervegan.com. I use this in class quite a bit because he has basically data mined a number of things to find correlations that you and I know are not at all accurate. They're not actually showing any sort of causal relation.
Right.
But some of my favorites are U.S. spending on science, space, and technology correlates with suicides by hanging, strangulation, and suffocation.
Ah.
You know, number of people who drown by falling into a pool correlating with films Nicolas Cage appeared in. And there's just a lot of really fun... people who drowned after coming out of a fishing boat correlating with marriage rate in Kentucky at an R value of 0.5. So this is a great website for people who don't understand that correlation
this is
not
awesome.
Equal causing. but it is a really cool website that I've used for a number of years in class.
I like this. Per capita consumption of mozzarella cheese correlates with civil engineering doctorates awarded. Makes sense.
Yeah. You didn't know that. The more cheese people eat, the more likely civil engineering doctorates are to be awarded.
There you go. So we should eat a lot more mozzarella cheese. Specifically mozzarella, right? So this is an awesome website. I'm looking at it right now. That is awesome.
It is a great example of how it is and to data mine random things that don't mean anything.
Okay.
$15 rechargeable lighter. Another cool thing, a little pricier, $36 is the cable card. The cable card is a little credit card size device that opens up, and inside you've got a USB-C to USB-C cable, a connector for C to A, a connector for C to Lightning. It also has a little light built into it. It has a Transflash card reader built into it. And it also has a wireless charger built into part of the card. So it is a little pricey at $36, but I throw this in my bag, and it's really the only thing I carry with me for random having to connect X to Y to do something. And I've been quite happy with it. I got it last year right around Christmas time.
So how does the wireless charging work? Do you plug it into a USB-C PD port and then just, is it a Qi charger, or how does that work?
It's a Qi charger.
Okay.
So look at the thing. You can see that one of the ends of the USB cable actually plugs into the card.
Uh-huh.
The other end is open. You take that open end, uncoil it, and plug that in. And it powers the USB charging. Oh, it also comes with a SIM card remover, because I guess those are always hard to find when you need them.
That's very true. Yeah, I don't even know where mine is. I just added it to my car. So keep talking.
Extremely bright.
I added one of those to my car.
They actually make an extension cord, too, if you need a longer USB that's also in the card format.
But oh, nice.
That's about $20.
And I ordered three of those OXO things.
You're going to get my Amazon commissions up just on...
Yep, I'm using your links. I'm using your links.
Yeah. And then the last one is a cord that I bought a year ago, but it really is useful when you travel. It's the Anker Powerline 3-in-1 cable. And the Anker Powerline basically is USB-A to USB micro, but it comes with tips for Lightning and USB-C. So if you've got a number of things to charge, it's nice to have in your bag without needing. I mean, if you've got the cable card, you already have this as well.
Yeah.
But it's nice if you need a longer cable than what the cable card comes with. And yeah, it's Anker, so the name that people are familiar with.
And it's 3 feet long. As you said, it's longer than the little credit card size thing. You know, I ran into something. Speaking of length of USB-C cables, I ran into an interesting situation the other day, and I bought a an external LCD monitor that is allegedly, you know, you just need a single cable, and sometimes it works in some configurations. But here's what I discovered. So from a MacBook Pro, the one I'm using right now, plugged into, let's see, did I plug it directly into MacBook Pro? I can't remember now. But if I plug the external display into the MacBook Pro with a USB-C to USB-C cable, it works if the cable's 3 feet long. If I use a 6 foot, a 1 meter essentially, or almost 1 meter, a 6 foot USB-C to USB cable, it does not work with a single cable. And I need to provide separate power. So I'm wondering if the power transmission of the longer cable is literally too long to transmit. But it's a low wattage device, you know? So I can't quite figure it out.
It's just there to annoy you.
Yeah, and I am talking to the manufacturer about it, saying, hey, you know, this is kind of weird. I've had other problems with the device, although I use it. It's good enough that, you know, I didn't return it. And it was pretty reasonably priced at the time. I think it was like $150. But at any rate, okay, getting back to actual affordable stuff, under $100. Okay, so next one is one I do not have. Next one is mine. I do not have it, and it's the Raspberry Pi 400. Which we've talked about in previous podcasts is there are two versions you can buy. One is $70, which is just the Raspberry Pi 400 itself, which is the Raspberry Pi 4 overclocked in a keyboard. But you know, you need to go get a power supply and a Bluetooth mouse and other stuff to add onto it. For $100, for $30 more, you get the Raspberry Pi 400 kit, which you know, includes a mouse and a power supply and a HDMI cable and a little book. It's for $30, I think it's worth it. All you got to do is add a display, essentially. An HDMI display, and you're off and running. $100, I think it's good, because I think the Raspberry Pi 4 in general is good. So, you know, the base operating system looks cool, and having it built into a keyboard is even cooler. Reminds me of my beloved Radio Shack TRS-80 Model 1, which I still have, which is also a computer and a keyboard, which I thought was going to be the norm, because you might recall the Apple II was also, well, it was more than a keyboard. Mm-hmm. Basically, it was a notebook that ran on an AC before notebooks were invented. But at any rate, $100. It's overclocked, so it's actually faster than the Raspberry Pi 4s you already have. I'm really looking forward. I think I'm going to buy one, even though I don't really need one, quote unquote. Much like that thing John kind of sort of talked me into buying last year.
Yeah, I was going to ask how you've been enjoying your Crow Pi.
I have not. Well, it's not that I haven't enjoyed. I haven't played with it, so that's kind of on my to-do list. Maybe I'll do that if I ever take a day off. Okay, and John has a last item that is related to the Raspberry Pi 400.
Yeah, well, I guess we really like Raspberry Pis. We just started a Raspberry Pi podcast. I think we could fill it. But yeah, the Pi Boy that I bought in August 15th was my order date. I got information on, I think I detailed this on the podcast, on I think October 26th that it was in processing. And then I finally got a tracking number about 2 weeks ago, and awesome. Then it wasn't even picked up for a week. And so it finally got picked up right before Thanksgiving, and it should be here on Tuesday. It is in transit.
Nice.
So I have cleared my schedule for Wednesday so that I can play with it when it comes in. It is going to be hopefully fun. Plus, just nice to have another Raspberry Pi to play with. So.
Yeah.
But it does look like a Nintendo Game Boy, if people remember that and have nostalgia for the Game Boy, like I do. The Pi Boy, you can either get the base kit for $89, or you can get, you know, much like the Raspberry Pi 400, you can get the base, or you can get for another $30 the accessories. And if you really want, if you're lazy like me and you don't feel like putting it together, you can pay $180 and they will assemble it and send it to you with everything you need. So,
and I assume because
that is what I have ended up.
I haven't looked at the link. I should do that. But I'm going to assume, oh yeah, it comes at a display. That's yep. pretty cool.
And a rechargeable battery.
Wow.
So the whole thing runs in its little case, but of course it's a Raspberry Pi. So the top of it has, you know, where the cartridge slot was on a Game yeah. Boy, you actually have four USB ports and an Ethernet port, so you can plug it in to whatever you might need it to run.
You know, looking at this, I know what I want now. I want a Raspberry Pi 4 tricorder.
You know, I would buy that in a heartbeat.
Right?
That would be
with sensors
yeah,
and
there
stuff.
Would be no, oh yeah, I don't even care what if it works completely or not. But a Raspberry Pi powered tricorder,
yeah.
What I really want, if I could have any prop from Star Trek The Next Generation,
yeah,
it would be basically Crusher's medical kit. Like the actual you know, bag that the tricorder slipped into the side
right.
and a hyper spray and all that. That would be if anyone's ever looking for $1,000 gift for me, then find all the various bits and pieces and models and make one of those for me.
And you know,
and that would be perfect.
Even going beyond the Next Generation, the original Star Trek, the original series, Spock used to carry a little man bag with his tricorder in it because it was an oversized science officer's tricorder. You know, he presaged that whole fanny pack. You know, man bag thing by decades, or at least the Star Trek writers did.
Well, I mean, they also predicted communicators that we call cell phones.
Yep. So if only we had a phaser for some people to cut me off in traffic. But anyway, you know, mounted on the front of my car. Okay. Anyhow, those are our suggestions for possible things to consider for yourself or friends and family. Everything is $100 or less in our list, unless you go big time with Pie Boy. I guess then it costs a little bit more. But and John and I have tried everything except the last two, the Raspberry Pi based products. But we've used Raspberry Pi, so we like that. We already know we like that. Alrighty, we actually used up more than 40 minutes. I guess I should have known. We're so good at this. Alrighty, so that wraps up our affordable tech gifts podcast, and we will talk to you next time.